All lines are now bridged.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to what is now our second meeting of the Interoperability Standards Priorities Task Force. We have quite a full agenda today, so we will officially call the meeting to order, starting with roll call. Ken Kawamoto?
I'm here.
Stephen Lane?
Present.
Anil Jain?
I'm here.
Arian Malik? Not yet. Andy Truscott?
Present.
Hello. Quinn McDonald?
Present.
Thank you. Cynthia Fisher? Not yet. David McKelly?
Here.
Edward Jun?
Present.
Carrie O'Malley?
Here.
Les Leonard? Not yet. Jack Poe?
Here.
Raj Ratwani? No Raj yet? Okay. Ram Charan? Not yet. Ricky Bloomfield?
I'm here.
Sasha Termot?
Hello.
Pat Weingarten?
Here.
Thank you. Tamar Fakawi? Not yet. Tina Esposito?
Present.
Valerie Gray?
Present.
And Victor Lee? Okay, we'll circle back to those who may be running a few minutes late. So we are fortunate enough to be joined by our national coordinator, Dr. Rucker, and I will turn it over to him for a few opening remarks.
Thanks, Lauren. We'll keep this part real quick. First of all, I mostly wanted to just thank everybody for the major effort of participating in this committee. As folks know, standards work is a bit of an acquired taste. It may have come naturally to Clem, I think, but I think for the rest of us, it's an acquired taste, and it's a lot of work, but it's absolutely critical to getting this done. Obviously, the task force, I guess we're looking at roughly a 15-month type of, overall time span here to do this. It's something that was called out by Congress, and our deliverable really, I think in large part, is the Interoperability Standards Advisory document, but anything in the surround is there. So that I just want to thank everybody for putting in the hard work on that, and we look forward to that. Two announcements. One is really sort of a bit of a very exciting news thing that I think most folks know, but 2 weeks ago, roughly, the physician fee schedule, we put out a proposal for a blended payment rate for the office E&M codes. One of the biggest problems with electronic medical records is the vastness of the boilerplate text that is in those records. I want to give a call out to Sasha and her colleagues at Epic for nicely documenting. Sasha, I think, as in the Annals op-ed by some of the folks earlier this month, 4,000 characters for an average ambulatory note versus 1,000, right? Is that what you guys found?
Oh, I don't remember the numbers offhand, but it was different, yes.
Yeah, it was. It's pretty striking, and this has also sort of been gamed over time. If you actually look at some of the other statistics, so it's open for public comment. We invite public comment on that, but we think this may be a big move to making electronic medical records a more tractable proposition, especially with the 21st Century Cures Act making these notes available to the public, and as the rulemaking comes out on that. So before, all of that stuff was sort of a little bit of a wink and a nod, I think, in terms of the providers and the payers sort of understanding the nature of the boilerplate text, but you know, the public is not going to, I think, understand that. So in sort of a modern computing environment, we feel this may be a very big advance, but we do invite everybody's public comment on that, which I believe is due September 10th, I believe is the date for that. The other thing is just we have our second annual interoperability forum next week, August 6th through 8th, afternoon of the 6th through afternoon of the 8th. I know a number of the folks on the call here are participating in that and want to thank you for that. We're pretty excited. I've had a chance to plow through both the overall agenda and the various track agendas, and it's really looking pretty good. So we look forward to that in person, and again, just want to thank you, and especially want to thank Stephen and Ken for their work in sharing this. So I think let me hand it over to Beth.
Hi, thanks, Don. If we can go forward a few slides.
And sorry, Beth, just before you start,
yeah, no problem.
Check in with Stephen and Ken to see if they had any additional opening remarks before we get started.
Yeah, thanks so much, Lauren, and thanks, Beth, for your readiness. This is Stephen Lane. I just wanted to also add my welcome to everyone and thank you all for your ongoing participation. We just had great attendance today. I did want to take a moment to just review the homework a little bit. All of you were invited to spend some time reviewing the interoperability standards advisory, which Dr. Rucker just made reference to. I think you, if you had a chance to do that, you found a lot of very valuable content there. A couple things I did want to point out. Brett Andreessen is here if we have any questions that people had about that. One thing I wanted to highlight is that everyone has the opportunity to create a personal account on the ISA site and to receive email notifications of changes that occur there. And if you're on this work group, you might want to do that. Also linked on the site is another related site called the Interoperability Proving Ground, or IPG, which has 410 specific projects listed on it that folks around the country have undertaken or are ongoing in order to kind of test these standards. And I think there's a lot of very valuable information there. Finally, I wanted to point out that in Section 6, under questions and requests for stakeholder feedback, there are a number of comments that have been submitted over the last year and a half from very thoughtful commenters from organizations such as the EHRA, HIMSS, IHE, AHIMA, and I think that as we are all deepening our understanding of this space and the work that we're going to be doing here, going through and reviewing some of those could also be valuable. I just wanted to point that out and see if anyone had any questions for Brett or comments about the ISA or the IPG content that you reviewed. Hearing none, that's great. Thank you, Brett, for taking the time to join us. And then, Beth, just by way of introduction, I wanted to thank you for coming and preparing these materials to share with the group. You'll all recall that last time when we spoke, we discussed the various priorities that were laid out in 21st Century Cures that are going to be orienting our work on this task force. And the first of those priorities was that we were interested in priority uses of health IT that arose from the implementation of incentive programs for the meaningful use of certified EHR technologies, the merit-based incentive payment system, alternative payment models, and the hospital value-based purchasing program. So there's a lot to unpack there, there are a lot of situations where the government has seen fit to ask us to utilize certified EHR technology. And Beth is here to kind of put all of that together for us again, to help orient us to the work that we have to do. Ken, do you have anything you want to add?
Nope. We're going to get into, I think, good discussion in the meet on priorities today, so looking forward to that discussion.
Great.
Great.
Let's proceed then.
So that was an excellent segue. Diving straight into, if we can move to the next slide. My name is Elizabeth Myers. Some of you probably know me already, and some may not, but I am the Deputy Director of the Office of Policy at ONC. I also used to work at CMS on some of these programs, so I've actually worked on them from sort of both ends. So picking up from the segue there that talked about the priorities, we wanted to just toss this back in here for you. At the reference point, we can come back to this during discussion as well to sort of remind people of each of the pieces that we're talking about. But this is the actual text from the law that outlines what the identification of the specific priorities actually is. So I'm going to dig in a little bit on little Romanesque I there, and it's fairly small on my screen, but it's what was just stated a moment earlier about one of the priorities being looking at priority use cases that arrive from the implementation of health IT within these various programs. Broadly speaking, the CMS programs cover a fairly wide range of provider settings, but it's predominantly what we're going to talk about a little bit today is meaningful users, because that's historically what has set the context that other programs reference at CMS when they're talking about what types of tech is used. So we're going to mostly focus on the quote-unquote meaningful user space, which is now the promoting interoperability space. So we can go to the next slide. So this is an oversimplification, I realize, but we've found this particular, not quite a Venn diagram, but descending circle diagram, I suppose, useful to help folks who are not in the tech space understand what we mean by these various different terms that we use when we're looking at regulations and laws that say, you know, we're talking about this health IT, we're talking about certified health IT, we're talking about the certified EHR technology. So health IT, obviously hugely broad space. Certified health IT modules, that's what ONC actually certifies within our program. We used to have a different construct to the program, and over time it's evolved. And where it has evolved to is to look at standards and functions sort of as packages that relate to specific use cases or to a specific standard implementation. And so you could actually theoretically come in and purchase a different module for every single function that you wanted from a different product. Obviously, most of the products that come through do have some sort of packaging of these things to create a sort of baseline set. But overarchingly, the way our program looks at them is individual certified health IT modules that allow for there to be a sort of flexible implementation of different standards in different ways. The CMS definition that is used for CMS programs is the nickname CERT, C-E-H-R-T, but it's certified EHR technology. And there is a difference in terminology that is used between what ONC looks at in our programs and what CMS is looking at in their programs. So obviously an EHR is sort of a subset of health information technology that serves in a clinical setting to meet a number of clinical and administrative needs within that setting. What CMS has defined in their CERT definition is a specific package of the technology modules in the ONC program that are required for use in those CMS programs. So essentially, ONC is setting the standards that developers need to follow. CMS is setting the, when you do these behavioral actions within our program, you need to use technology that is including this piece. Broadly, the CERT definition lines up fairly closely with what we call the base EHR definition. A little bit confusing, but the ONC base EHR definition is our baseline set of requirements that we say this is sort of the minimum to meet a qualified EHR if we're talking about an EHR package. So broadly, those two things are fairly correlated. There are a few things in the certified EHR technology definition that are specific to meeting CMS programs. So let's move to the next slide. So there's sort of two ways of looking at it, and I tossed this slide in here because I think this might be a useful resource as you're doing your homework in addition to looking at the ISA. We created a large infographic, it's quite extensive, that covers all of the 2015 edition. And it covers all of the various functionalities as they relate sort of broadly to a clinical priority like care coordination or clinical quality measurement or patient engagement, electronic prescribing. These types of things are all sort of defined within a clinical construct. You can also crosswalk these to the different program requirements. So there's sort of two ways of looking at it because of, you know, what we were talking about in the slide previously. There's the specific package within the CMS CERT definition, but hopefully no one is just buying an EHR for the sole purpose of reporting to CMS. Each of the things that are included within that are tied to a behavior for the CMS program, but they're also broadly tied to clinical priorities that providers are implementing for their own clinical practice improvement or for their own clinical processes. So this sort of provides a foil to looking at it just by the CMS program requirements, and sort of looking at the two in tandem can help to crosswalk, you know, what is the broader clinical priority and then how does that relate to the CMS behavioral priority so that we're understanding where the standard fits in terms of an actual clinical workflow. Next slide, please. So the certified health IT provisions that are sort of adopted through a number of CMS programs, and this is just a list here. There are, and I should probably caveat this, so a few of these slides are going to look a little bit old from things you might have seen in proposed rules, but I do want to make very, very clear that anything that is in here is based on final rules from CMS. So we are prohibited from interpreting or making guesses on what CMS might be putting into future final rules based on things that have been currently proposed. So what you'll see here is a little bit constrained to what has been in prior final rules. And if you do have any questions that actually relate to the CMS policies on the behavioral side, we have colleagues at CMS that we work with, obviously, on a pretty much a daily basis, that we can connect you and get some of those questions answered as well. But I wanted to sort of set out the context here. So obviously, the Medicare and Medicaid Promoting Interoperability Program previously had been referred to as the EHR Incentive Program. And that historically, going back to 2011, has been the path by which CMS has required providers to adopt an EHR to participate in doing certain activities. In stage one, you were really looking at data capture and certain standards, and over time that has evolved to including things like health information exchange, patient access to records, various types of clinical decision supports. So that over time for eligible clinicians or eligible professionals was roped into what is called the Medicare Quality Payment Program and Merit-Based Incentive Program. We're going to spend a little bit more time on that because it does help to provide some context overall for what CMS is looking at within their different programs. But there are a couple other things that that do reference health IT. I want to point out the CPC Plus alternative payment model and others. There are a number of CMS alternate payment models that do have tech requirements. The thing to keep in mind for each of the CMS programs at the current point, CMS has worked fairly hard over the years to try and make sure that each new program that is adopting a requirement that there needs to be a technological component to support the behavioral action for a program, they have aligned and used the same definition. So essentially, even though there might be different program requirements for a Medicaid hospital than for an eligible clinician in MIPS, the overarching definition of what goes into their technology package is aligned. So it's aligned to the same ONC modules. Now, there's obviously some slight variation for certain things in hospitals, like how computer provider order entry is done and a couple other small details like that. But generally speaking, the overarching definition is the same. And they did that deliberately because of the transition space that they see people to be in, where, you know, primary care providers and hospitals may be fairly far along adoption, but across the rest of the care continuum, adoption may be lagging depending on what space you're in. If you have relationships with certain medical facilities, you might have better adoption. So they have tried to keep that package sort of universal to make it a little bit easier for providers who are meeting multiple requirements in multiple programs. If we can go to the next slide, please. So just very quickly, the reason I want to focus on the merit-based incentive payment system and the quality payment program itself is because this particular program includes some references to technology that are sort of where CMS has recently made some changes in terms of how they're focusing on what types of technology they're looking for. So in the merit-based incentive program in last year's final rule, CMS did put forward that the 2015 edition would be what is required beginning next year, so in program year 2019. And in that program, a number of previous Medicare programs were sort of combined through the MACRA Act several years ago. So it combined the value-based purchasing program for eligible professionals, eligible clinicians. It combined what was called the Physician Quality Reporting System. So that was the prior quality reporting program for doctors. And it combined what was the EHR incentive program for doctors or eligible professionals. So those things were sort of put together into one program. And the way that it works is that there's a scoring system established to determine what your positive or negative payment adjustment would be, depending on how you report measures for each of these categories. Now, I want to point out the improvement activities category is fairly new, and that's been a space where CMS has been trying to be fairly flexible in including clinical practice improvement activities that relate to a fairly wide range of practice settings. Next slide, please. Can we go to the next? My connection is timing out, but if we're on the next slide, I'll just keep talking.
We are.
Okay, great. So this slide, you should be looking at something that has sort of four corners divided up. Some of you have probably seen this more than once recently. But this is outlining how tech is referenced in the different sections of the quality payment program. And the reason I wanted to put this up is that this is sort of a microcosm of how tech is referenced in CMS programs overall. So the ACI category, that is the promoting interoperability piece, and that is where that's the former meaningful use. So within that, there is a requirement that you must use certified EHR technology, meeting that baseline definition, to participate in that section of the program. And so it has pieces that relate to closing the health IT referral loop, looking at providing patients access to their record. It looks at incentivizing public health and population health reporting. So that is sort of going to look familiar to what some of the historical EHR incentive program is, but it has changed over time from a very get a standard and make sure that you're capturing the data element in that standard to using things like clinical decision supports to moving toward more dynamic health information exchange. So that's looking at how systems can promote and develop an interoperable infrastructure and use it to improve care. So health IT and quality is over on the other corner there in sort of purplish. So this is looking at electronic quality reporting for physicians. So back from my other slide, you'll have noticed that there is a hospital quality reporting program as well. Uses the same definition of certified EHR technology as the baseline. There are differences between what is certified for the hospital quality measures and the quality measures that are used in the quality payment program because they are setting base and certification for those measures is specific to the specific ECQM. So in the quality payment program, there is an end-to-end electronic reporting piece to the quality category, and that allows for some pretty wide flexibility. So it does allow a clinician to get points for their score for that category based on reporting an electronic clinical quality measure that is one of the CMS electronic clinical quality measures. But one of the other interesting things that CMS did that I think is sort of important to look at how they're trying to work from a behavioral side and us from the tech side to look broader than what they've defined in their electronic clinical quality measures is looking at how, if there are electronic clinical quality measures, that maybe it's a registry measure and that registry has electronically specified their measure and they are in fact using standardized data elements, that you can get credit for your electronic reporting bonus if you're using your certified tech that has those data elements standardized in it to report something beyond what the CMS electronic clinical quality measure is. So on the hospital side, at this point in time, they're still restrained with the electronic clinical quality measures for the IQR that are CMS specific, but there are options available that you could potentially leverage tech for some of the other reporting. So I'm going to point out two other things on this slide and then go quickly to sort of a little bit more detail on what is currently required for those specific promoting interoperability or meaningful use actions. The health IT improvement activities. So CMS had developed a category or a sort of a subcategory of improvement activities in the clinical practice improvement activity section of their MIPS program that included references to technology and how it could be used to implement those clinical practice improvement activities. So there's actually a fairly significant number of them that specifically reference the use of certified EHR technology for implementing that improvement activity. I think there's 30-something of them at this point in time. For awareness, that doesn't mean that they have to be done using that, but it's trying to put forward the information that providers might find useful to understand how their clinical practice improvement activity can be supported by technology that is currently existing in the industry. So if it is something to manage diabetes, there are ways to look at using patient-specific education and patient access to records and care coordination to help support that clinical practice improvement activity that you might be doing that might be tied to a specific use case or a specific population. And the last thing I want to point out is health IT and APM. APMs are the alternate payment models. There are specific alternate payment models that are included in the quality payment program. For each of those, the standard CMS originally adopted was that at least 50% of clinicians in that advanced alternate payment model must use certified EHR technology. Again, this is the same definition of that package of certified EHR technology. So it's the same package of function and standards from the ONC program that has to be used. The difference is that in an alternate payment model, the model itself is defining if there are additional certified health IT modules that might have to be part of it. For example, if you are to look at a care plan, which is another option that we have in the certification program that is sort of beyond the cert definition, looking at things like how to filter electronic clinical quality measures down to different use cases. Those things are defined by the model, and the model also defines what it means to be a user of that technology within the construct of the model. So it's a little bit different than having a broad scope CMS program, and that implementation is specific to the models. Next slide, please. So I'm hoping I still can't see, so I'm hoping that we are on the slide that has the sort of boxes that says what is in. Okay, so there's an error on this, but I will point that out as we get there. I thought I had provided the one that was updated, and I apologize for that. So there are six categories of specific things that are part of the Advancing Care Information category, the Promoting Interoperability category, for meaningful use for the merit-based incentive program. They are protecting patient health information that is performing a security risk analysis consistent with the HIPAA security rules. Electronic prescribing, I want to point that one out in particular. That one is a requirement of the HITECH Act. So it is a part of the program that is required for all participants that are doing meaningful use. The patient electronic access, so that includes the provision of access to a patient in using the 2015 edition for 2019. That does mean using the API that is currently in the 2015 edition. So it is looking at providing access to view, download, transmit, and access, provides the patient access for, through an API. And that's a really important distinction. The it's sort of all four actions are required to be accomplished, not that you can choose to just do a patient portal or just do the API. You actually have to provide all four actions. Now, if your API solution also allows for the view, download, and transmit, then you can do it in that way that things sort of overlap. But it's essentially requiring that all four actions are completed and then using the 2015 edition to do so. Care coordination through patient engagement, that includes things like secure messaging, patient-specific education, a PGHD capture, which is actually using a sort of open capture certification criteria to allow for patient-generated information, patient health data capture to be incorporated into an EHR. And then there's the health information exchange, which includes both the transmission of a summary of care record, but also the ability to receive and incorporate and reconcile information from that record. And then finally, public health reporting and clinical data registry reporting. This includes immunization reporting. There is the ability to use PDMP reporting to get credit for a measure within that category. And it includes things like specialized registries as well. So it's sort of a snapshot of the primary areas of focus for CMS right now for these programs. Obviously, again, my disclaimer that there have been proposed rules, so CMS is looking at changing things over time, but until such things are finalized, this is how we have to sort of refer and think about the construct of where the current state is for the CMS programs. So that is the end of my slides. I think we do have, looks like I have about 6 minutes available for questions. So if there are any questions on anything here, I know this was a bit of an overarching overview, but I wanted to mostly emphasize and reiterate that what the sort of interplay is between our certification program and the standards that we're looking at and how they become part of a package that providers are required to use. So I will pause there and see if there are any questions.
Beth, this is Terry O'Malley. Just the focus on the eligible providers makes obviously a lot of sense because that's where the focus has been for so long. And there seem to be some pathways to the farther reaches of the healthcare continuum, the ones that aren't using certified EHR technology. And I'm just wondering, is there a roadmap for sort of pushing this out to, you know, home and community-based services? Now, are the EHR technology used in skilled nursing facilities and home health, are they certified or going to be?
That's an excellent question. I think, so a couple of points to that question. From the concept of, is there a home health certification or an EP certification or hospital certification? So the program, so this is why I think this line is, this sort of line difference between how the two programs interplay is really, really important. At ONC, we try to think about the certification program as being a floor, and we're trying to make it a floor that as many people as possible can build on. So we actually don't see the program, and this is been a deliberate effort over time to make the program more in this manner. Originally, it was largely to support, you know, the meaningful user in their programs back in 2011. But we see the need to be looking at standards for broad use cases that fit multiple settings. So it's attempting to try and address things that can be fairly setting agnostic, like the ability to exchange a record, the ability to capture a certain thing in a certain LOINC code, and so forth. CMS, there isn't an incentive program for people beyond the meaningful users or the hospitals. So there's the eligible professionals in the hospitals. There are folks who are looking at alternate payment models that include a wider range of things. There are also alternate payment models that look specifically at sort of specialties within some of the settings that we've been talking about. So there's some interesting things coming up that look at, you know, pediatric care, or that look at how long-term post-acute care is incorporated into an overarching health system package that's part of an overarching alternate payment model. So they're definitely looking at it, and those conversations are happening. There's also interesting work being done in the long-term post-acute care programs at CMS. I think they might be some folks that you'd actually want to talk to, so we could get them available for you. But there aren't specific requirements at this point in time that are sort of regulatory program requirements beyond this current space that we're talking about. So the discussions are definitely happening, both in how to make sure that there aren't care settings that are just sort of left behind the technology race, but also making sure that as the transition happens, so, you know, as SNFs and long-term post-acute care facilities move to adopt technology, which a fairly significant number of them are, you know, how are we ensuring that that is integrated and that the data that is needed to move from one setting to another can do so, and, you know, we don't have data graveyards. So we're definitely thinking about it from the integration side, and CMS is definitely looking at it from, like, what are pieces or parts of their program that can make it so that there are opportunities for providers who may not be participating in a meaningful use program but may be connected with CMS in another way to be incentivized to adopt Health IT.
This is Clem. Could I ask a question along the same line? So we heard a talk today from the acting, I guess, medical informatics director of CMS, and she talked about the blue button and the downloadability to patients and eventually perhaps to providers of the stuff in the VRDC. That's the big database of Medicare. And I believe that the OASIS data is in there, and I'm not sure, so the question is, which is home health care, whether that data is going to be downloadable too with the blue button. This may be out of your space, but still wondered.
So I have to say that the CMS folks are the right people to talk to about that one in particular. I can say that is not a question that we haven't heard before, and there are lots of conversations about how, if that data is available to more folks, how will that data help support care continuum? So I can give you that much, that it's definitely something that we're thinking about, and we're thinking about in partnership with CMS, and that they are very much thinking about in terms of getting further detail on exactly the various use cases and settings that they might be thinking about specifically. We'd have to defer you to CMS, but we can get some folks that can help with that.
To encourage Terry, and we recently had a connection with a big home health care unit in Georgia who's going to use FHIR and the CMS standard codes for the OASIS codes to deliver them to OASIS, I mean to CMS. So their standards are coming there.
Can you hear me? Is this David McCauley?
Yeah, David, thank you. This is Stephen Lane, and I wanted to give you a chance to speak. I wanted to thank both Terry and Clem for your comments, and highlight the fact that David very appropriately raised his hand using the hand-raising function in the Adobe Connect, and we're going to try to rely on that. So thank you, David. Go ahead.
I'm not trying to be pushy. I was worried that I wasn't connected through because I had trouble earlier, and I somehow was in listen-only mode. So apologize for being pushy, but you trained me well on the hand-raising mechanism. But my question is kind of in the other direction, which is, if this priorities task force identifies a new use case and a, you know, new use of a standard or a new standard to use, what's the process that actually becomes relevant to these incentive programs? Does it have to become part of a subsequent edition of certified EHR technology? And what would that process and timeline look like? Does that make sense as a question, Elizabeth?
So it does. I think that there's a question of some scope. So we want to be a little cautious about scope with this task force, that the concept of with what the law says about prioritizing use cases for the implementation of the program it doesn't really say that we should tell the programs what to do, so we have to be a little bit cautious there. But essentially, the CMS team has, you know, they have a call for measures for clinical quality measures that goes through the NQF process every year. They have done calls for improvement activities for incorporation into the merit-based incentive program. They've done call for meaningful use measures in the past, and I think they're considering how that might, how these things might be more interconnected instead of separate going forward. So there's definitely space for public input to CMS about what they should be considering and looking at beyond just, you know, did you comment on the proposed rule? Then there is also the opportunity always to put in public comment on a proposed rule. The thing to keep in mind is that it does take sort of time for them to work through those things and make sure that they're implementable for a wider range of people, because they certainly don't want to require something that isn't feasible. From our end, the things like the work that we're doing around the interoperability standards advisory, the types of information that we get back from you all will inform our policymaking decisions about how our program evolves over time and the way that we prioritize things that we're looking at over time. So there are ways to have the idea of saying, you know, this is a really innovative space that's happening. Should we be looking at adopting this on a wider scale? There are feedback loops, and we can talk more about those in detail as sort of to where to feed those ideas.
Is there a plan to have something? The 2015 edition is 2015 time stamped. Is there a plan to have a 2020 edition, or is that up to be determined?
So the unified agenda for this fall notes an ONC rulemaking, and that is to implement the provisions of the Cures Act, the ones that are ONC oriented, I should say, because there's obviously the Cures Act is huge. There's some pieces of the Cures Act that direct ONC, for example, this new version of the FACA, some of the work on burden reduction in 4001, the conditions of certification, the trusted exchange framework, that give us an opportunity to sort of rethink how we're looking at things. So I can say stay tuned, and there may be more information provided to give you some context of what we're looking at the time that the rulemaking that's identified in the Unified Agenda is available.
Thank
you so much, Elizabeth. Really appreciate your presentation and taking questions. Arian, we can see that your hand is up. I think we're going to actually cut off questions here and move on to the rest of our agenda. We have just about 30 minutes now before we transition to public comments, and we wanted to use this time for diving down into our priority uses. So if no one objects, we're going to go ahead and do that. What we're doing is we're going to switch over the screen, and Ken is now displaying a version of the use matrix that we shared briefly at the end of the last meeting, and we're going to use this to collect your thoughts, in particular about these priority categories that were specified in 21st Century Cures that we just reviewed with Beth's help, and try to start kind of collecting ideas about, you know, what's important about these categories, what sorts of uses do we see as critical and falling under these categories, and just kind of collecting comments and insights. And what we'd really like to do, Ken's highlighting the fact that we added one at the end regarding infrastructure to the 9 that were laid out in the regulation. And what we're hoping to do, you know, during the next half hour, as well as probably during some time in our next couple of meetings, is really kind of dig down into these priorities and get your insights, remembering that we've collected a very broad group of stakeholders onto the task force. We also have the public listening in, and there will be time for public comment at the end. Before we start digging down into the details of the priority uses themselves, really understanding these categories. Before we start, I just wanted to make one other comment that I neglected to make at the front end, which is that the minutes, the detailed notes from our meetings are prepared at the end of each meeting. Ken and I work with the ONC staff to finalize those, and those are posted to the HITAC portal, and all of the members of the task force do have access to that portal. Our understanding is that all of you have set up your accounts and made that work for yourself. So the way that the FACA task forces work is the detailed notes are not made part of the general public record, but are made available to the task force, whereas all of the materials from our meetings are made public. And that's not up to any of us, but it is the way it is, and just want to make sure that everybody was fully aware of that. So with that, Ken, maybe can I ask you to kind of orient us to how you envision this part going forward, and then I think what we're going to try to do is kind of run down the list of the task force members and give everyone a chance to kind of just shout out or provide some input on these priorities. And Ken's going to be getting that down as we go, and then we will try to reorganize that and bring it back next time to build on.
Ken? Yeah, absolutely. So so we thought of different ways of doing this. We thought probably the easiest and probably most productive way to do this is to just lay out what the focus for 21st Century Cures Act are for priority categories, including this notion of cross-cutting infrastructure. So if you have things that you think are, you know, related to a variety of different aspects of health IT, we can put it there. But to really just go around and get your thoughts on what's priority uses, after we get all those thoughts over the next several meetings, we can start getting into different potential ways to further classify, group, organize our thoughts. But we thought basically this is sort of like brainstorming session, right? Where the things that are at top of mind, you bring in. I think what we're thinking is, if you're focused on research, we can go right into your research priority. If it's on public health, we can go there. If it's on cross-country infrastructure, we can do that, et cetera. So that's the idea. It's, I'll live edit while we're going. And as you're commenting, if you see that I'm sort of noting your thought sort of differently from how you'd want it expressed, just let me know and I'll correct that.
And I think that realistically, if we get through one round of this today with all the task force members, that will be a job well done. And I think that in the future, we'll start going a little bit quicker. And Clem, I see your hand up, but I think, well, why don't you go ahead and make your comment, and then we'll start the round with Andy.
Well, I'm just not crystal clear on how to think about this. Now, you can't use any data unless you get it. And I think we still have problems with that. So I'm not sure I just don't get my head around what we're trying to get to.
Yeah, and I think go ahead, Ken.
I know, Clem. So big picture, right? So there's the notion is we identify priority uses as well as the standards and technology needed. Now, when you say we don't have this data, I think you have probably certain use cases in mind. But if it's things around, infrastructure needs, like say this particular type of data that you think is important is in the record, but we don't pull out, or we pull out in different ways, or it's stored in different ways, captured in different ways, I think that would go under infrastructure, right? Because that's highly likely to be cross-cutting. So I maybe put it another way. I think if whatever you think is the most important thing we need to do in this area, we can figure out, I think, in this matrix where to put it, because as a catch-all, we have the infrastructure, right? So,
well, we started out at the beginning of the year with a list of classes of data that might be good to get. And I guess, I don't know, I guess these don't connect at all. I'm at a loss for knowing what data we think we're going to have access to, or is this a way to decide what data we should have access to?
Clem, I think that really what we wanted to do is we wanted to start by getting people's ideas about the priorities themselves that were laid out in the law. again, the notion of infrastructure is sort of an add-on. It wasn't called for by regulation, so we're creating it as another place to put some ideas. But we want to dive in and get people's thoughts and questions. I think your question is well put, and maybe Ken, you can get that down. But the notion of access to data is clearly a key issue for all of these. But again, these are the priorities that we were asked to evaluate by the regulation. So we just want to get people's ideas out about the categories before we dive too deeply into the uses themselves and then the prioritization of those uses. So let's just give it a shot. I see hands up, but what I want to do is I want to give everyone a chance to talk. So Sasha, if you can just hold that thought, we're gonna try this. Thank you. So Andy Truscott, you were unable to join us last time, so welcome to the group. And do you have any general thoughts about these priorities as laid out in regulation and how we might orient ourselves to them? Andy Truscott, if you're speaking, you are on mute. And if you don't have anything to add, that's totally fine too. Okay, I'm going to.
Hey, sorry about that. I was on mute.
There you go.
I'm good with this. I think this is a good considered series of focus areas, and I think we're going to probably elucidate more as we go forward. And I think some of the priorities are going to emerge, as we work forward with this group. I think something else is going to come out as well is going to be how we would consider realizing the priorities in the minds of those who will be consuming these the use cases and the standards, and how we can help assure adherence to the standards as they go through. I think those are going to be emerging themes as we go through this. But good to meet you all as well. Thank you.
Great. Arian? We might have some trouble getting people off of mute in time here. Arian Malik? Great, we can come back. I know you had your hand up earlier. Let's see. I think Carolyn, you're the next task force member in line. I'm going alpha by first name, so if I miss somebody, please stop me.
Can you hear me now?
There you are. Arian,
okay.
You're back.
Yeah. Don't know what's going on with the technology, but anyway, here we are. So I think this is a pretty good list of potential uses. I do think we're going to need to prioritize, but I can anticipate that almost all the things that we're going to come up with will fit one of these slots. So I think it's a good organizational structure. I guess my point is that at some point we're going to need to create a more focused, prioritized list, because in order to make progress through interoperability, you need to pick a few bullets and aim them carefully.
Great. Let's see. Next up is going to be, I believe, Cynthia Fisher. No, Clem. I'm sorry, Clem. You've already commented.
Yeah, and I'd just listen to see what, get a better sense of it.
All right. This is tricky because I'm trying to make sure that I capture the members of the task force and not others.
Stephen, this is Lauren.
Carolyn, Could you guys run the list?
I can just run the attendance list. So I'm going to go back to the top and start with Anil Jain.
I didn't see him on the call, but that's right. He may be just audio only.
Okay. In fact, I just got a note. He said he had to drop off a few minutes early. So I'm going to jump down to Cynthia Fisher.
Yes, this is Lee. I'm fine with as presented thus far. I do think it would be helpful if perhaps on the side or a sidebar or some discussion, really looking from the patient's perspective and the caregiver's perspective on prioritization. I think an organization needs that on the use needs from the patient side would be warranted.
I'm not sure if you caught that. It was breaking up on my end.
It was, but I think this was a comment.
Okay. Alrighty. So did you capture Cynthia's comments, or should we try to clarify?
I think I did. I'm pretty sure this was the comment.
Alrighty. David McCallie?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
Oh, good. So my understanding of what you were asking us to do was taking this given list that's defined in the Cures legislation, start to flesh out some specific uses. Am I on the right? Maybe I misunderstood the instruction.
And yes. Any comments that you might have regarding the priorities themselves, clarifications that you want to add or clarifications that you'd like to get from ONC or others, just to orient us to the work ahead.
Right, but the list itself is from the Cures, so it's not a list that we have a lot of choice in expanding or collapsing, as I understand it.
Correct. Right? We just need to understand it.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, it's a broad list and certainly enough to keep us busy for a long time. I mean, I have some, you know, some specific things in each category. You know, for example, in patient safety, I think we need to standardize ways to report out safety issues in a consistent standard way that respects the patient's privacy, but at the same time captures the context for a near miss. I think in individual access, we've got to start with the read-only APIs of the 2015 edition. Quickly, consumers are going to expect to be able to do other things in a standardized way, such as make appointments, send secure messages to and from their clinicians. So I think we could radically expand the capabilities for patient access through the APIs. Research, I think the plethora of different research export formats that we have to deal with in the vendor community should be coalesced around a standard Firebase research export format that could then be transformed into the shape that's needed by a specific research community. I think we could make progress in that space. I think there's a broad infrastructure need to better define how we do structured reporting. We have made a couple of passes in the standards community around the ability to, for example, capture data for registries where you sometimes need quite detailed data, maybe more detail than is typically captured in the EHR's normal workflow. So how do you interject?
David, could you repeat that one? You were going up. Could you repeat that last one? Could you repeat that last one?
Sure.
Under what category?
Yeah. So category maybe it's done. More infrastructure. Okay. I'm not sure where it fits, but Ken, and I'd be happy to write these up too, send them to you offline. But the registry reporting. It needs a standardized way so that the hundreds of different registries that want data out of the EHR workflow could do it in a consistent, standardized fashion. And registries, I guess, are an upstream feed for clinical research, so maybe this would fall under the clinical research category. But as it is now, it's custom work for every new registry, and that's not a sustainable approach. There's a number of projects underway to try to get some consistency there. The ACC, the cardiologists, have a massive work effort to harmonize the way they do it, but it needs to affect all the registries. Does that make sense?
Yep.
And then on the innovations in HIT space, I think we have a good start with smart apps and CDS hooks. but those are obviously still fairly immature. So I expect that we could expand the support for the ability to create plugins that allow for innovative companies to interject their products into the clinical workflow. In other words, innovations need a way to get onto the desktop of the providers, and smart apps and CDS hooks are starts, but we got a lot more work to do there. I think, Ken, you certainly understand those two comments.
Yeah, and I just realized that Google Docs doesn't re-spell change EHRs to HERs, so I'm just very appreciative of that.
Innovation.
David, thank you for all those comments.
Yeah, I'll stop there. I've used up my airtime.
Yeah, Terry, I see your hand is up. Do you feel like you need to get in now, or can you wait till we get to you in the sequence?
No, I can wait.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Almost there, Terry. First, Edward.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Well, I agree with what was mentioned earlier, and another general thought is, as we begin looking into the various priority uses and statutory categories or new standards, would it be helpful in also addressing how each of these would impact broader fields, such as population health, public health, community health, or individual health, or addressing how each of these priority uses, statutory categories, or new standards would impact, for example, the needs of the healthcare system versus the needs of the public or versus the needs of the caretaker, as Cynthia had mentioned earlier?
Yep, okay. Got that.
Okay. I'm sorry, was that it, Edward?
Yes, that's all on my end.
Great, thanks. Terry?
Sure, just a couple of comments. The connection with the US CDI work in this is obviously, I think, very strong. And one of the issues we brought up talking in the US CDI is the need for specific use cases to help focus us on sort of not only the data, but also the process and the uses to which it's going to be put and the customers who want it. So we might want to think at some point about specific use cases. That's just one comment. And then two potential additions. There are a couple of processes that are pretty fundamental. And one that just came to mind was the process of attribution. Now, how do we attribute individuals to clinicians, individuals to payers, individuals to in specific registries even, but it's the process itself and whether there's a standardized way of doing attribution. And then maybe let me throw in the comments that I shared, Stephen, with you and Ken earlier, and that's about some, in a sense, cross-cutting issues that really affect all of these categories. And one would be sort of everything around the unambiguous identification of the individual. Yeah, how do we do that? And then so the next related piece is, again, the individual controlling the data is sort of how do they give permission to use it? And what are the specific uses, like those listed under TESCA and others? And we kind of, the mirror issue for the rest of the healthcare system is unambiguous identification of who they are. In a sense, attribution and unambiguous identification are all related. So I will stop there. Thank you.
Okay. I'll just circle back. Do we have Les Leonard on the line?
Yes, I am on now.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Did you have any comments?
Yes, I wanted to make one comment to say about specifically about the prioritization task. It seems to me that, you know, as we're focused, when we can identify different specific tasks that use essentially the same infrastructure, that, you know, if we those have to be prioritized, that it's great to look at these one at a time for priorities. But what I really like is the idea that, you know, can we focus on a set of common methods that allow us to, you know, hit three or four of these at the same time. For example, the issues on population health, public health, and research all may have the same standards required for interface. There may be different specifics about the vocabulary that may change, but the approach for, you know, downloading groups of patients and the data on those, that also may be true for safety issues as well, that if we can find a core across four or five of these areas, then that would cause that whole area to be promoted together and to be prioritized together.
Thanks, Les. I also wanted to take the opportunity. I welcomed Andy as to his first meeting. Clem, I think we also missed you at our initial meeting, and I wanted to officially, you know, welcome you to the task force, and Les, you as well. It's great to have all of you here. I'll just say it now. Scott Weingarten also missed us last time, and I think hopefully is with us at least in spirit. So thank you all. Also, Terry, I wanted to acknowledge for everyone's benefit that Terry O'Malley is one of the co-chairs of the USCDI task force. And brings with him really a deep knowledge of the work of that group, both past and potentially in the future. So we've got great representation there. You want to go ahead, Lauren?
Okay. We'll resume with Jack Poe.
Thanks. I agree with what many of the members have already mentioned. So a few things specifically. I think the ability to have a unique patient ID and a unique provider ID would be really important for a lot of the innovation work. The ability to do something that is much more substantial than modern FHIR or CVS hooks would be really helpful. One thing that would be helpful to add somewhere is some standardization to figure out how to add, let's say, CVS results, whether it's a model or some sort of output from some sort of clinical decision support, some standards around how you would add that data back into either the EHR systems or registries or some sort of storage system. And
what was that you were referring to? Predict the model results? What was the information?
Yeah, whether it's predictive or some sort of CDS model results. Right now, they're essentially all
ad hoc. What does CDS stand for? Sorry, I'm not familiar with that. CDS, okay. Okay, got it.
And the last thing that I would add would be some way to actually standardize the request for either permission or the type of information that these apps are asking for. So there's some of us have been thinking about, as meaningful use free comes online, there will be a lot of apps that are made by innovators that are going to start asking for information from providers or from health systems, and some sort of standard on how patients can actually view those requests and keep track of those requests. Otherwise, they're likely to get extremely confused and either give away a lot of permissions or don't really know how to answer those queries.
So just to verify, you're talking about patients having like a good sense of who has accessed their data for what. Is that what you're talking about?
Exactly. Some standards okay. around that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll take a couple more before we break for public comment. So we'll go to Raj. Raj, any comments? Are you on
Roger,
mute,
if you're speaking, you're on mute.
Okay. Well, we can circle back if maybe he had to drop off. Ram, any comments?
I don't have any.
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah, I don't have any comments right now. I'll send you some emails.
I think
he said he'd send it an email.
Yes, so we can go to next now. Thank you.
Ricky Bloomfield?
Sure. I agree with many of the comments that have been made already. Just a few things to add. One is making sure we look at the issue of financial transparency. I don't know if that would fit under payment incentive programs, and CMS has done some work already to require health systems to release their some of their fee schedules publicly. To go along with that, real-time benefit check is also an issue that's come up by an API, so that knowing the end user or the patient's benefits can be used to make better decisions at the point of care. And then access to claims data, which, again, CMS has sort of blazed a trail here from the Blue Button 2.0 standpoint, but getting the private payers on board with that as well would be very important from the user perspective. Then also looking at standardized outcomes, a la ICHOM and the work that they've done, making sure that's in broader use. That probably fall under either quality patient care or public health uses. And looking
how
at
do
ways
you,
to accelerate
how do you spell
that.
ICHOM? Is this right?
I-C-H-O-M. Yep, you got
okay,
it.
Got it.
Yep. And not saying that we need to necessarily adopt ICHOM, but at least looking at standardized outcomes in a way that is scalable so that we can better measure these, obviously.
Could someone send the ICHOM stuff around to everybody?
It's on the web.
Yeah, you can, if you just do a Google search, you'll get their website and have access to everything, but it would be good to add to the notes so that folks have access to it. Yep, there it is.
Very complicated.
Yeah, and if there are better ways to do that, then I think that's something this group can discuss. It is a complicated thing, especially when you look at international uses. Then for ability for individuals to access electronic health IT, I think that ONC has looked at patient matching a little bit. I'm not sure if the outcomes there were scalable with the competition that happened. So looking at ways to implement that so that we can reduce barriers to access across multiple EHRs and portals. And then just in general, lowering the barrier to portal access. Right now, it's very heterogeneous, the requirements across multiple health systems and EHRs, mostly based on local policy, what the requirements are for users to create a portal, whether it's in-person identity proofing, whether it's remote KBA, and so discussing that. Also related to individual access, there's been a lot of discussion around directory of FHIR endpoints, so making those endpoints more discoverable. There have been suggestions of RSS feed type discoverability there so that when these endpoints are made public by the health system, they could also be easily discovered in an automatic way so that developers have an easy way to understand who has APIs available. Right now that's difficult and not always public. And then from the infrastructure standpoint, we've already raised USCDI. I think looking at that, some of the one of the items that many folks have said was sort of missing from the Argonaut implementation was consistent application of the encounter resource. So having the context for where the information came from and the encounter it was related to, which tends to be from a consumer perspective how they group things and think about it. But right now that's totally missing from Argonaut. Although some EHR vendors have implemented it, it's not yet available in a standards.
Can you Ricky, could you repeat a little bit more on the deficiency you saw on the encounter interface again?
Sure. So the encounter resource is not something that's been implemented via Argonaut. And so it's not yet available in a scalable way across EHR vendors. And the encounter resource is critical from a user standpoint. That's how they tend to group the information that's collected about them is related to the clinic visit or the inpatient admission that they had. And so right now, labs that are done, procedures, et cetera, aren't tied to that encounter in a programmatic way. And then the other one is provenance of the data. There's a provenance resource in FHIR that's not yet well utilized. So we can have a better sense of origin of data, editing of data, so we can audit that appropriately and understand the life cycle of the information. Those are just a few things off the top of my head. I can think about a little bit more as well, but it looks like we have a good list started here.
Okay, thanks, Ricky. I think we'll try to squeeze in one more before we go to public comment. Sasha, since you had a comment earlier.
Sure. So two areas that I would try to add quick before we go to public comment. I'm happy also to send along more thoughts over email. One would be around quality measurement, which of course is very relevant to the federal programs that kind of Beth started our conversation today about. And I think even within the quality measurement space, there's usability aspects of the data capture and the impact on clinicians, which ties very similarly to some of the registry things that were talked about. There's also questions about submission and transparency of data. For example, clinicians have very little insight into any of the cost measures that are they're being evaluated on. And, you know, I think that's, as that becomes a larger and larger component of some of these programs, certainly something that's of interest. The second category that I would like us to add as a priority has to do with a lot of the expansion of FHIR apps that folks have been talking about, and it's to sort of standardize how we express the policies and terms of use that different applications will have for a user. And I think that as patients are making choices about which apps they want to connect to their health records and how they want to use those, knowing sort of how the data is stored, further transmitted, the possibility of it being deleted or public, all of those pieces of data will be of interest, but it's hard when they're buried in a 20-page long legalese to kind of really pull out what might be significant in that decision.
So this is Clem. I passed my turn. I guess got a short thing to add, if I may.
Go ahead, Clem.
So I think we got to remember, and I don't know where this belongs, in general or up in clinical care, but you got to remember that that one person's burden is another person's boon. So that, you know, thinking specifically about sort of the registries, one of the challenges of, say, the cardiology registry is costing hospitals a fortune to collect it because data costs. And so if we convert it to what the physician has to do in the regular process of care, it's a burden, but it's a boon to the other. So there's people with no skin in the game. Somehow we got to balance the cost and perhaps even demand some high-quality requirements on the data they ask to collect, because a lot of these questionnaires are just kind of out of the sky. They're not really validated or anything. So just a thought, whenever we think about the stuff we like to add, who has to do it, and is it just free for the person who wants it and very costly the person has to do it?
Thanks so much, Clem, for those comments. I think we're going to stop the round at this point and pick up again at our next meeting, because I think it's really valuable for everyone to have a chance to chime in. And we should probably go to public comments now.
Great. Thanks, Stephen. Operator, can you please open the public line for comments? And just as a reminder to the public members dialing in, we ask you to keep your comments to no longer than 3 minutes. And the phone number is presented on the screen. Operator, do we have the public line open?
Yes.
And do we have any comments in the queue at this time?
No comments.
Okay. Hearing no public comments, we'll just give it a few additional seconds. Stephen and Ken, would you like to resume the kind of round robin comments, or should we just break and discuss next steps?
I think we may one or more comments, yeah.
Okay.
I think our understanding is that Scott Weingarten, Scott, are you on the phone? We don't have you down.
I think we may have dropped Scott.
Okay.
And let me just confirm, operator, no additional public comments, correct?
Correct.
Okay. All righty. So then after Scott and Alyssa, is Tamer? Is Tamer still on the line? Coming off mute. Okay.
Hello?
Yes.
There we go.
Oh, there we go. Thanks. I agree with the previous comments. I feel that the priority use areas are appropriate. I wanted to second some of the comments about benefit checking being an area to look into, as well as under innovation, more robust integration into the EHR with third-party apps and services. And then also discussing the standards around outcomes reporting. That's all.
Great, thanks. Tina? Oh, I'm sorry, I believe Tina said she had to drop early. Valerie Gray?
Hi, Lauren. I agree with the earlier comments, and I'm all set.
And then last but not least, Victor Lee.
Victor, you're muted if you're talking.
I don't see him on the attendee list, so he might have dropped.
Okay.
He was on earlier, but yeah.
So, Stephen and Ken, I have a list of those who we didn't hear from today, so we can perhaps circle back on the next call. But I will turn it over to you and Ken for next steps.
That's wonderful.
Sure,
Thank you so much, Lauren. Go ahead, Ken.
And Stephen, do you have any personally that you'd like to add as well, or?
Well, the one other thought, thanks, Ken. Yeah, I think as co-chairs, we have a different role. I just wanted to make sure that Clem had raised the issue earlier about what data is available. And I think that you had a section where you were commenting on the role of USCDI with regard to use cases, as Terry raised. But I think getting Clem's comment in there is critical. And then the only other thing I was going to say more generally is that, you know, we as your co-chairs will go through this and try to really reorganize this, and we'll bring it back to the group at our next meeting and see if there are any residual comments, obviously, if people had a chance to think more, and then sort of orient us back to the use cases after we've done what we can to clarify the priorities themselves. But Ken, I think you deserve a chance to chime in as well.
Great. I'll add a few. So I think under privacy, I think it's really important that only minimally required data are shared, e.g. for fire scopes. That's kind of a technical discussion, but I think that's kind of an important one and should be, I think, a relatively doable fix. And then I just go into the notion of we need agreement on a publicly accessible set of detailed, clinical models to achieve true semantic interoperability. I think anybody who's been in this space knows it, but we got to define things at a much deeper level, I think, for some items, and I think we need to figure out how to do that. But that's it.
Great. So with regard to next steps, we have a slide up which lays out the timing of our next few task force meetings. The next one will be 2 weeks from today. Again, we have 90-minute meetings planned. The HIT Advisory Committee itself is going to be meeting the Wednesday after Labor Day. And again, all of these meeting dates and specifics are posted on the web for the public to see, as well as for all the task force members. So any other comments that task force members want to bring up? There are no hands raised at the moment, but if people have anything else they want to add, either about the content or the process, Andy, I see your hand is up.
Yeah, hey, just a quick moment. I just want to agree with much of what Ricky said. I think it would be very easy for us to lose sight, though, of the comment he made around a more infrastructural standardization. So actually understanding what APIs, interfaces, whatever, are available from any provider at any given moment in time. I think we could very quickly move on to more functional type standards without actually giving sufficient attention to those more infrastructural components. So I think we just need to make sure that's covered. We often talk about syntactical standards. We often talk about semantic standards, and that's a couple of the dimensions of interoperability. But just make sure we don't forget both provenance and context as well, and how that is truly exchanged to enable interoperability to take place. I think that's important. And then final, and this is a previous commentator spoke on clinical decision support. I heard where we persist decisions that are made, absolutely, but also make sure that we persist the information that those decisions were made with. Just so you've got those two facets in supporting that. That's it. Great call. Really enjoyed it.
Great. David, maybe you can get the last quick comment in.
Sure. The one thing that didn't come up that I had intended to mention, but I don't think anybody said anything about, was advancing in the notion of how you do interactive care planning. We have, care plans that are static documents to be exchanged today, but I don't think that's going to cut it for population management. So just put on the list of, maybe it's in the infrastructure category, is interactive care planning.
Thank you so much. And David, your comment brings us to time. I want to thank everybody for your participation and your input. I'm really glad we gave everyone a chance to talk. Ken?
Yep. Thanks so much for joining on in the summer peak of holiday summer vacations. Appreciate it.
And we'll see everyone in 2 weeks.
Thank you, everyone.
Take care.
Bye.